This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to a special fireside chat. I'm your host, Thomas Watson, Enterprise Trucking Carrier here at Freight Waves, and super, super excited today. We've got Mr. Jim Ward, TCA's incoming president. He's coming here to speak to us a little bit about some regulatory questions, as well as some important things he's seeing in the industry. Jim, super excited to have you on. Welcome.
Hey, Thomas. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you. Yeah, it's kind of a unique time. You're catching me right in transition. I'm transitioning out of being the president of DM Bowman Incorporated for the last 22 years, 29 years of service with them in total, and getting ready. That'll be this Friday's my retirement. And on Monday, I'll be starting as the TCA president in Old Town, Virginia.
And talk about hitting the ground running. You're talking about as soon as you're taking this thing, the Biden administration recently released some proposals on EPA legislation, the potential to cut nitrogen oxide emissions from heavy duty trucks by roughly 90% below current standards as soon as 2027. What's it like coming in there? What are your thoughts, especially TCA's thoughts about this new legislation?
Well, if I may, I'd like to give credit to Dave Heller, our Truckload Carriers Association Safety and Vice President of Government Affairs. We recently sent out a statement regarding this issue. And if I may read it to you, we basically said that TCA is committed to working with the Biden administration in exploring the possibilities of utilizing proven emission reduction technologies to efficiently and effectively and safely supply our nation with the goods it uses daily.
I think that's a great point because we're starting to see, especially states such as Oregon, California, Washington, other parts in the Northeast, New Jersey, New York, and Massachusetts, there's also a focus on this advanced clean trucking, zero emissions, cutting emissions. And, you know, for coming from trucking yourself, are there a lot of risks, especially with when you're crafting this stuff? What's the potential downside here if it's not handled right?
Well, a couple things that you just mentioned. And I think it's important that the industry continues to get credit for what we've done, the engine manufacturers and the trucking industry. You know, since the 2010 emission standards, I mean, NOx has been cut by approximately 30%, which I think we need to make absolutely sure that, we get the credit for that. And secondly, you know, as an industry, we certainly support a nationally recognized NOx standard, not a state-by-state standard. That is so difficult for us to be able to deal with, and we have to deal with, you know, state regulations that vary from state to state. We would much rather see a national NOx emission standard than a state.
And I've seen it firsthand, like even states setting their own fuel tax. You have the KYU permits in Kentucky, you have Oregon taxes as well you have to deal with. You know, is there a very real risk that while it may be good intention, it can cause an undue burden on some of these smaller carriers who may not even have the resources to, you know, get a hold of some of this equipment for a while?
Well, absolutely. You know, 97% of the industry is made up of fleets of 20 trucks or less. And so they certainly bear a much more significant burden most of the time than us larger carriers, you know, from the ability to be able to negotiate. Fuel surcharge is a great example, you know. Really concerned about the carriers right now with the fuel environment that we see ourselves in. I mean, they don't have the negotiating power with some of their shippers as we as larger carriers do. Plus, you know, cash flow is a real challenge for them. And so they're paying for that fuel when they buy it at the pump. However, they're not going to get a return until several days, you know, 60 days later, possibly. And so it's a real challenge for them. And you know, we need to make sure we look out for these smaller carriers.
And I think that's something a lot of people don't understand is how larger ones can profit off of these surcharges. You can kind of weather the storm a little bit, but these smaller carriers who are already buying more expensive trucks as well, you know, there's a huge risk to their margin. Is there a potential, especially with these incentives, we're talking about electric trucks, is there a serious potential or conversations that, you know, these guys are going to miss out on the boat because who can afford a brand new electric Class 8 when you can hardly afford a used combustion engine Class 8?
Well, let me just make one correction, if I may, on your comment previously. Yeah. As large carriers, we don't profit off the fuel surcharge. We just try to make ourselves whole. And so that's why we negotiate with their shippers on the various fuel surcharges. And but you're absolutely right in the point that you make. I mean, you know, if you are a little smaller carrier and you don't have near the leverage or the cooperative buying opportunity that some of the larger carriers have, it is a real challenge for you. And, you know, and they're the bread and butter of the supply chain right now of what we do and moving our goods. And so we hate to see them, you know, get themselves in a really overdue burden type position.
Because there could be a very real risk that if, you know, not only this legislation goes into effect, but, you know, we may not be able to handle any other surges as quickly as possible if the business cycle hastily changes, you know, given COVID and stuff. There's a real risk, correct?
Well, we've just come out of a very challenging period. And again, my hat's off to all of our members and all those that are out there in the industry. I mean, the things that we were able to do to be able to keep goods moving through the challenge through COVID, I mean, was really incredible. And it was great that the industry finally recognized us as being essential. We've all known we were essential for many years. However, it was finally nice to be recognized by the federal government and the general public. And I don't think our image has ever been any better than it is today. And we want to continue to manage and uphold that. But in doing so, you know, we're coming out of a time where there is still a real labor challenge in the industry. And as you know, there's still real issues in the supply chain. And one of the issues in the supply chain are parts and components for equipment. And so, you know, many of us that's placed orders with our truck manufacturers have had some issues in getting the equipment that we've had on order, not only last year, but still going to experience some of the same challenges again this year. When we look at these emission standards, you know, normally there's a pre-buy whenever something like this goes into effect. And so, which again puts really large constraints on the manufacturers when there's a high demand for the equipment. But the other thing is that we have to continue to encourage the Biden administration as to whether it's EPA or CARBs, that they work with the trucking industry and they work with the engine manufacturing. I mean, our industry is all about uptime and reliability. And we've been through some really painful challenges as a result of not having time to really, truly test the technology and make absolutely sure that we're going to get that reliability out of it whenever it goes into place.
I think you bring up a great point, especially testing the technology and actually having it on the road. I remember so many times, even with newer 2022 Cascadias, Freightliners, whatever make and model, internationals and whatnot, the particulate filters, as well as the technologies that influence these emission standards, you know, it can have a lot of impact. And so, like you said, if the parts aren't there, if you're changing to technology, then there could be a potential that your trucks are out of action due to some of these extra burdens being put on, you know, the equipment, right?
Which is going to just create more challenges in the supply chain and create frustration amongst our commercial truck drivers. So that's not what we want to see as an industry.
What would you kind of like to see if there was the opportunity, you know, trying to get you all involved as well as stakeholders from the Biden administration? Are there any things on like a wish list, so to speak, that you'd potentially like to get out?
Well, again, I think it starts with the engine manufacturers to make sure that the administration is working real close with them. And then once the technology is decided upon, that we have an opportunity to be able to test the technology, get it out in a real world environment and see exactly what some of the challenges are going to be with it. You know, we're all for clean air. We're all for being a good nation on our nation's highways with the general public. But so we acquire a lot of safety technology on our equipment nowadays, as you very well know. But in doing so, sometimes there's some challenges with it. And so we'd like to be able to work those bugs out on the front end before we get somewhere down the road with a piece of equipment that we find out has huge issues. And then you have to get the equipment back in, possibly under warranty, get it repaired. You experience all that downtime and inefficiency. And to be quite honest with you, the impact on the supply chain is pretty significant.
Completely agree, especially recent articles talking about recalls from Navisphere due to some emissions-related control technology. There's a big risk. And I think, like you said, a lot of people they understand that you guys are all on the same team. We want to have better, cleaner air. We want to have better roads. We want to have better things. But the biggest thing that you all are bringing up is how fast, who do we involve, and how much are we able to at least talk about it before we do something drastic that may hurt us down the road?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Thomas. And so I would just hope that they would listen to our plea and involve us, and you know, that we would be able to work ourselves through this process, that we have a reasonable outcome.
And I'm thinking, like, shifting gears a little bit, we're talking, looking at climate-related financial disclosures. So, you know, there's a big pressure right now on trucking companies in terms of emissions. But recently, it also appears that there's huge pressure on investors and companies to disclose their strategic outline on environmental, you know, how will you be impacted by climate change? Is that something that could be really rough for a trucking carrier if you have to put on your thing saying, hey, if something disappears, you know, there may be problems or, you know?
Yeah, that certainly could create a challenge for us. And, you know, in talking with the shipping community, there are other ways to be able to address some of these things. And I'm not saying technology is not going to change, because I think we live in a world today where we all know it's going to continue to evolve and continuously improve, hopefully for the best. But, you know, just a reduction in deadhead miles can certainly have an impact on a shipper's carbon footprint. And so there's things that we can do in our freight networks and working with the shipping community as well to try to help some of these challenges that we're talking about here today.
I think you have a great point. We see a lot of technology and stuff talking about trying to connect loads with one system, but it's just as important for carriers, coming from your background, that you all don't want to drive empty as much as possible, because not only are you burning more things, you're costing yourself more money.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think looking at some of those operational, what I'm going to call efficiencies, that we might be able to continue to work together on, could certainly create a great balance for us or some improvement for us as well.
Do you think, especially pricing strategies, if you're a large carrier thinking of making huge orders, you know, is there any potential changes to your buying strategy if these trucks that are internal combustion, they're going to start having increasing regulations on emissions or maybe replaced by, you know, electric vehicles? Is that something you guys are worried about coming up on the horizon?
Well, again, as I said a few minutes ago, we certainly know that different types of alternative fuels, electric, et cetera, they're coming in the future. How soon in the future, as I said here today speaking with you, I can't begin to tell you. Probably depends on who you ask. We'll give you one timeline and somebody else will give you another. I know right now they're really hard to come by. If I wanted one, I'm not so sure I could get one. And if I wanted one and could get one, I'm not so sure I could get the power to charge it to keep it moving today, to be quite frank with you. But having said that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's like I can't even find the internal combustion engine to begin with, never mind trying to get an electric one.
And, you know, about an industry of ours where you know, we use 46 billion, around 45 to 50 billion gallons of fuel a year. That's pretty significant to think that we're going to be replacing that anytime soon. However, I think we all know it's coming. It's coming somewhere down the road, and we'll transition to it, because there's going to be applications for it that's going to make sense, and it'll probably move into those applications sooner rather than later. But as it does, I still truly believe that the diesel combustion engine is going to be around with us for quite some time. Now, I've been wrong many times before, but there's so knowing that. You know, I go back to working with the Biden administration. We're certainly encouraging them right now to, you know, our motto is drill, baby, drill. We'd like to drill here domestically to provide ourselves some relief. I mentioned to you in 2019, we used 45 to 50 billion gallons of diesel fuel at $3 a gallon. So pretty significant. Today, as of what, mid-March, we were at $5 a gallon. So you start doing the math on 45 to 50 billion gallons. It's pretty significant in the impact that we're seeing on our cost of fuel, which is our second largest line item on our income statements. So, you know, we've got challenges today that we're confronted with, let alone looking towards the future.
You got a great point talking about drilling. And, you know, it's almost a situation where you want to do these green initiatives, but if you don't secure your domestic energy supply and you make the prices go up too much for your people and your carriers, there's a really real risk of overshooting and potentially causing more harm than simply like trying to get more fuel through other domestic drilling as well. Could you talk a little bit more about some of the goals with that? Is it basically trying to get with them to the administration to encourage them to bring in more fossil fuels as we transition, just to help make sure that nobody, you know, loses their way of life in the, you know, the meantime?
You're spot on. And again, you know, we're a very patriotic industry. And so we'd like to see that drilling be done right here in the U.S. rather than going offshore and buying it from somebody that, you know, wants to bomb us or shoot us or whatever might be the case.
Yeah, it's important to make sure who you're getting the fuel from. They're also pretty friendly. Friendly fuel is the best fuel in general. Looking at like federal and state, checking especially on economic regulations and energy, you know, how, talk a little bit about some of the, I think you guys have made a lot of progress on your fuel economy. Do you think there's kind of this situation where a lot of people don't understand that it benefits you all to have greater efficiency as well? So it's not a matter of, you know, we don't support it. It's just a matter of, you know, how we get there, correct?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I've been around the industry for quite a while. I first came to work for Don Bowman here in January of 1986. And like I said, I tell everybody, you can probably tell by my haircut, but I've been around the industry for a while. And, you know, at that time, if you could get 6 miles to a gallon, as we were all talking, you thought you were doing something really incredible. And now we're sitting around a table talking about 8 miles per the gallon plus in a lot of these new equipment and all, and some even much higher than that. And so there are benefits to this continuous improvement in regards to equipment and technology.
What do you think moving forward? Is there anything across the horizon that the TCA, especially like near term right now, given high energy prices, we got a lot on the plate. Is there anything that you think we should be paying closer attention to coming up in the next 5 to 10 years that maybe are going to impact trucking in some kind of unique way?
Well, I do think one of the big things is going to be labor. I think there is as we see demand today, we're sitting here today, we know we're over 80 some thousand commercial truck drivers short in the industry. We know through the National Clearinghouse from the Drug and Alcohol Administration, there's a significant number of individuals that have gone out as a result of the drug and alcohol testing that's sitting on the sideline and haven't come back in to start a program to reenter the industry. And so bringing new labor, new individuals into this industry, and it's been a challenge for a long time. This isn't anything new, but I think it's more critical today than it's ever been before. So things like this federal registered apprenticeship program, where the involved in the most recent infrastructure bill, where the Drive Safe Act, where we're talking about bringing some 18 to 20 year olds into the system and starting to look at how they perform interstate versus just intrastate. I just think those are a lot of really good things that are taking place. More women coming into the industry. So that diversity, I think, is really important. You know, you're hearing of some fleets that's running up to 13% now, you know, women drivers, very safe, adapting very well to the industry. So I think those labor issues are a real challenge, but I think we're seeing some things fall into place that I believe somewhere down the road are going to be very beneficial to us. Autonomous vehicles, we're going to see them. There's certain applications where it's going to make sense. You know, alternative fuels we talked about earlier, they're coming. There's no doubt in my mind. But again, they're not here today, and it's going to be a while before they get here. The same thing with the autonomous vehicles, which I like to call them driver assist. I think there's more the level four. I mentioned to folks that, you know, autopilot, I think, came into planes in the 1930s, and most planes I get on still have two pilots on the plane today. So I think driver assist is really an appropriate word to be used when we talk about, you know, autonomous vehicles of the future, at least initially. And yeah. And again, I like to hear people say, I heard a Wally Deck just say in Las Vegas on one of our panels that if you're a professional driving employee hired today, you're going to retire from this industry. So I think that's very encouraging and certainly something that we need to continue to promote and let people know that, you know, you're not going to be replaced by a robot like has been the challenge in some of the other manufacturing industries, et cetera. So there's a lot of things out there, probably some that I'm not sitting here thinking about today, but I wish, as I've heard Joey Hogan from Covenant just said recently on one of the panels, he wished he was 10 years younger in this industry, because I do think there's some really great, bright days ahead for those individuals and rewarding for those individuals that are going to be in this industry long term.
I think it's a hard time, especially hard to find drivers. I've seen it firsthand. You got recruiters, you know, you bring folks in and after 6 months, half of them leave the industry because it's such a stressful job on top of, like you said, things like parking, lack of facilities for drivers. There's so much going on in the background that people don't pay attention to. Do you think that there may be some help if the Biden administration or federal regulators try to encourage programs to say, hey, look, we're trying to develop these vehicles, but you have a place in them still? Is there any value in having the federal government, you know, help with TCA as you guys try to help encourage people to still apply instead of thinking I'm about to get replaced?
There's no question about it. And, you know, the number one issue in the ATRI survey the last couple of years coming from the commercial truck drivers has been truck parking. And so, you know, when you think about the average commercial truck driver daily spending about 56 minutes looking for a place to park, the frustration that that creates for those individuals in our industry is really challenging. And I think the federal government can play a big part in helping even take some of these discretionary dollars associated with the infrastructure bill and make sure that they get applied in the right areas where we can grow and advance trucking for these individuals that's out there keeping America moving every single day.
And I think that's level of stress. I did the research. I love that study you mentioned because it blew my mind. 56 minutes trying to find parking. It's so stressful. I got calls all the time from drivers. And, you know, a hidden thing of that is the cost of driver health. The last time the government studied it was in like 14, and it was like 40% of drivers do not have health care compared to 17% of employed workers in other industries. Do you think there may be an opportunity, as much as, you know, the Biden administration is trying to push for health care, to maybe have something focused on truck drivers to help have people healthier while they're out on the road?
Well, I know a lot of companies have implemented a lot of programs to encourage wellness within the driving force of their companies. And I think that's great. But yes, I mean, I think anything that we can do and work with the federal government on to be able to try to help us continue to make sure that the labor that we have in the industry today and those commercial truck drivers that are out there in a sedentary job, that anything and everything we can do to continue to try to help with their wellness, I think, is in all of our best interest.
I completely agree. I think a lot of people as well realize you're burning more. I think that's something that, you know, coming from trucking, idling is a big problem. And sometimes idling restrictions or where you're allowed to idle, drivers can literally freeze in their cab. You know, do you think that helping solve this parking solution may actually help with the environment as well?
Well, I think so. But I also think there's been a lot of technology, speaking of which, you know, we're talking about technology. There's been a lot of technology introduced. I can tell you all of our trucks. We had the S-Bar heaters on the on our trucks that use very little fuel, you know, per hour burning to keep the climate inside the cab nice and warm. Now that doesn't help the cooling situation, but it really helps the warmth in the cab. I've come into our terminal, our local terminal here in Maryland, on some really cold weekend days, and actually just got up in the truck and started it up and turned that S-Bar heater on, and was just amazed at how quickly that'll warm that truck and provide a real high level of comfort. And so we have to continue to look at everything and anything as an industry that's going to make the driving job better. And if we do that and we commit ourselves to doing that as companies and working with the federal government, I believe that we're going to have a whole lot better outcome and make sure that career is promoted as a professional career. And we'll start to see these middle schoolers and high schoolers become interested in that vocation.
I'm super excited to see that as well. Like you said, half the battle is helping the next generation get into this industry. And, you know, you're about to start officially on Monday coming up. You know, what are some things once you hit the ground running? Are there a handful of big things you want to try to knock out immediately? Or what's it going to look like as you're about to start this gig, this new position?
Well, this federal apprenticeship program, we just announced last week at our annual meeting in Las Vegas, which we had an incredible turnout, over 1,500 attendees. And so we were very pleased to see that, one of the largest we've had probably in at least 20 years. And our memberships continue to grow at TCA. And I think it's because of the things that, you know, John Leibold has been our president the last 6 years, and him and the staff at TCA have just done a wonderful job and continue to develop our educational platform, which is much needed today, especially as you start to see the transition of individuals through attrition and age going out of the industry and new people coming into the industry, helping provide tools that help them learn the business and understand the business better, I think is really important. And we've had a tremendous amount of individuals participating in some of those webinars that we've been offering. The other thing is the labor challenge. We just announced at the annual meeting that our members can access the federal apprenticeship program through TCA. We've now been recognized as the association our members can access through and become registered in just 2 days to participate in the program. So we think that's really important. And anything safety. Again, we have Dave Heller, our vice president, as I said, of safety and government affairs. We get a lot of calls regarding compliance and regulatory issues. And so we think we're a very good resource for that, and we'll continue to be. So a lot of moving parts, but really excited about all that's going on and taking place with inside TCA and continue to move that ball forward.
Well, Jim, I'm super excited, especially to have you start. Final question here. For folks who are not in the TCA or may want to join the TCA, do you have any recommendations on how they can either get in touch or start the process?
Absolutely. Just go to truckloadcarriersassociation.com and you'll see a member log in or you know, to gather more information about Truckload Carriers Association. There's certainly a contact number. I know some people would rather talk than just read on a, you know, on a screen. So please call us and our membership department would be happy to speak with you. Ask for Kelly or Ryan and we would provide you additional details on TCA and our membership value proposition that we have to offer.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate you coming on, and we are super, super excited, especially to see the stuff you're going to do once you start as well. Thank you so much. It's Mr. Jim Ward, and you can check him out at TCA and the Truckload Carriers. Keep an eye out because there's definitely going to be a lot more, as we're going to hear in the news, especially with recent developments in the legislation front. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you for having me.